afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio, where we give you your business, your life, your way. I'm your host, Donna Maria, the Chief Executive Indie, and I am so excited to be here today on Monday, February 12th. You know, one of the things that I commiserate with my fellow business owners about all the time is, you know, gee, when we call each other on the phone, how you doing? And the answer is so often, well, I'm doing great, but, you know, I wish I could just clone myself because I have so many things to do and a million phone calls to return and a million emails to return and orders to process and orders to pack and orders to ship and customers to service and websites to update and blogs to update. And, of course, the list is always endless. And, of course, we wouldn't have it any other way. I know that. But still, sometimes it's just, you know, you can sit down in your office or in your workspace and just go, you know, I'm so tired and I have so many things to do. I just wish I could clone myself. And, of course, unless you're Dolly the Sheep, you can't do that. But, you know, some small business owners have come up with ways to clone themselves without actually having to impact modern science and get politics all involved. And one of those small business owners is today's guest. Her name is Deborah Cohen, and Deborah is the owner of Home Remedies of New York, Incorporated. After becoming a mom 10 years ago, Deborah longed for the stimulation and income of a full-time job, yet she wanted to be at home with her daughter. She and her husband had at that time just purchased their first home, and the bills were mounting, and they also, to top it all off, had trouble finding reliable home improvement contractors to help them kind of get everything in order. So Deborah, being the well-informed parent that she was and homeowner, knew that other people in the area must be experiencing the same problem. So 10 years ago, she launched her business, Home Remedies of New York, which connects homeowners with pre-screened contractors like painters, plumbers, carpenters, and architects. She earns a referral fee from contractors who find work through her network. So there you go. There is an example of a person who has duplicated her business model, and I really am so excited to welcome you to the show, Deborah, because we want to pick your brain for all your tips and secrets.
Thank you so much, Donna Marie. It's my pleasure.
Now, as you know, I like to kind of start off my show by giving our listeners a little bit of a background about how you started your business, and I know I just kind of gave the overview, but I know there must be some far more interesting things than a broad overview that I mentioned about, you know, like transitioning from a full-time job maybe, or even just some of the things you experienced moving into business ownership. So tell us a little bit about your transition into having a business of your own, Deborah. Is this your first business?
Yes, it is, and I can't say that I was born with dreams of owning my own business. I think it's something that evolved out of my situation, and as you mentioned, I am the mother of two, and I launched my business after my first daughter, who is now 11, as of Saturday, actually, was born. I was working full-time in Manhattan, and I had just given birth to my daughter, and it was just brutal for me to leave her every day, not to mention I was traveling internationally and quite frequently. So I ultimately, with the tremendous support of my husband, decided that I would stay home, and we would try to live on one income, and we had just purchased a 75-year-old Tudor home. So for about 3 months, I was a stay-at-home mom with my newborn, and I would say after the unemployment ran out, so did my my motivation level, and I really started to feel that I longed to work, but I knew I wanted to be a full-time mom. And fortunately for me, as you said, I found a career right in my own home based on my own experience as a new homeowner. Most homeowners can relate to how difficult it is to find reliable tradespeople, let alone, you know, waiting around for them to show up, whether or not they're going to give you an accurate estimate. And I, too, was faced with that challenge because we were new to our community and we had a very old house on our hands. So when I did ultimately find a good pest control person or painter or floor finisher, I just felt compelled to share his name with other people. And one day, I remember I had my pest control specialist, who's actually still in my network, in my house because we had a squirrel problem in our attic. And I was so grateful to him for, you know, coming, solving the problem at a fair price. I said to him, if I got you work, would you want to pay me a commission? And he said, absolutely. I always want new work. And from that humble start, I decided to research this business concept in my spare time with my newborn at home. And my business idea originated as a personnel agency for the home.
And so almost like some people call that like a concierge sort of?
Well, actually, my initial idea was to have a personnel agency. Like, for instance, if you owned a company, somebody, and you needed a secretary to sit in for a week, you would call an agency, a temp agency, and they'd send you a secretary for a week. And I thought I could do the same thing with home improvement contractors. But after doing some research on it, I realized that the liability was greater than I was willing to, you know, take on, and that would require me to have a contractor's license. Mm. So I reformatted my business idea into a personal concierge service for homeowners, or just a referral service model. And that's how the business originated.
Well, that's you said a couple things that were really interesting. Number one, it didn't take you very long after coming home to kind of, these may not be your words, but let's say maybe get restless or
depressed.
Start to wonder. Wait a minute, maybe Manhattan doesn't sound so bad after.
Well, it definitely, you know, everybody has their own comfort level. I know many mothers who are 100% fulfilled staying home and raising their children, and I think that's fabulous. I know many mothers who have full-time careers, and they have help in the house to raise their children, and that's fabulous. I knew that I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, but I also had this, you know, I'd always worked. I'd always been productive. I'd always earned an income, and not to mention the fact we were on a really tight budget with a new house and living on my husband's salary. I just didn't feel good about myself knowing that there was I should be doing something to contribute to the finances. I just didn't know what it was.
Well, you know, the other thing that's so fascinating, and I hear this a lot, I'd like for you to comment on it if you would. Your business grew out of a situation that you found yourself in and not out of a desire to be a business owner.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's interesting. I've spoken to so many women over the years, and we go through different stages in our lives, for instance, planning a wedding, and you realize how much work goes into planning a wedding, and many women have developed businesses specifically through their experience in that stage of their life. Buying a home, many people, you know, decide, gosh, they buy a home and they start getting crafty around the house and they become decorative painters. In my case, I moved into a home and I also had a baby and my whole life changed. And that's how the business really took shape based on my own experience.
Yeah, that does happen to change your life.
Oh, yes.
So you got started. Now, did you find that there were any challenges or hurdles that you had to overcome kind of going into what was like a traditionally male-dominated kind of thing?
You know, that is a very popular question. And I always respond in two ways. Well, first of all, my first boss after college and my mentor, really, was a woman. So my only experience in the workplace was having a female boss. So I don't know, and I didn't have the same experience where, you know, you're in a male-dominated industry, your boss is male. My role model was a very, very successful woman. Mm-hmm. And second, I'm in a home improvement business, but I don't swing a hammer. My area of expertise is in sales and marketing and customer service and follow-up and organization. And if people, you know, if you've had experience with contractors, that tends to be where they fall short.
Yeah.
So they, one, appreciate talking to a woman during the day because they spend most of their time with sweaty men, as they've
right.
told me.
Right.
And two, my area of expertise is really, if you're going to say, a more traditionally female-dominated industry in the sales and marketing area. So I don't feel like I'm in a male industry, so to speak.
So you started off with this business. Was it just people in your neighborhood, or did you choose a particular county or city limit?
Yes. What I actually did initially was I did a little bit of market research before I, you know, just jumped into a media blitz or a direct mail campaign or an advertising my promotional campaign. This is a local business. Most contractors won't travel very far for work. So I tested the waters in my immediate area. And once I was confident that there was a desire for this type of service, and I knew through my own experience that there was, I hired, I didn't actually hire him. He offered his services for free, an old copywriting friend of mine from my previous career in Manhattan, and we designed a direct mail piece together.
Mm-hmm.
And I researched my market. I found the appropriate mailing list, and I sent out a direct mail campaign, and that was my first promotion.
Okay.
Announcing that my doors were officially open.
Wow. And so you sent that out to people in a particular defined area, and what did you find?
I sent it out to about 5 to 7 towns in my immediate area and just certain homes in certain markets. Not every. I didn't mass market my business. And two or three days later, I got 3 phone calls. And it was the most exhilarating day of every day of business to date. That was the most exciting day, just to think that you've created something and people want it and people responded to it.
That it actually worked. I love that. You got 3 phone calls. And, of course, today that's probably not a big deal for you. It's so funny. I have a friend who was describing that experience. She sells bath and body products, and she said she remembered the first day she got a stranger order.
Uh-huh.
Like someone who wasn't like her mom's girlfriend, or, you know, somebody that she knew from her kids' school. It was a stranger order, and she was just, you know, ecstatic.
Ecstatic.
That somebody she didn't know thought that, you know, something she did was wonderful enough to pay for.
It's very exciting. It's very validating.
Yes, it is, and I'm so glad you mentioned it, because it's those little things that make a difference, you know, they just accumulate over time. So you got those responses, and then, you know, if I was one of those people, or at least now, if I was one of the people that got one of your direct mail pieces and I needed someone to paint my house, Deborah, what would I do if I wanted to do business with you?
Well, a homeowner will generally call me. They can also visit a website. Many HRN owners now have websites, but my business is predominantly operated by phone. And they'll say, I need to paint our living room, our dining room, and our daughter's nursery. Do you know anyone? And I fill out a job order form. I get as much information about the homeowner and the job as possible. And then I tell them that I'll get back to them shortly with the name of a contractor who will be calling them. And then based on the information, where they're located, what their time frame is, what type of painting they want to have done, I refer the job to a contractor in my network. I can email him the information, I can fax him the information, or just simply call him. And he'll say, okay, great, I'll call her tonight after I get back, you know, to my office. Mm-hmm. And then I call homeowner, you know, Jane Doe, and I say, Jane, Ken of Ken Lack Painting is going to be calling you this evening after 4:30 to schedule an appointment to see your job. Ken will then go about his business as he normally would. I follow up to make sure he goes for the estimate. I get a copy of the estimate. And then I follow up with the homeowner and I get feedback. Did you find he was, you know, somebody you would want to work with? Was his estimate high? Was it low? Did you want a second estimate? Ultimately, whether they get one estimate, 2, 3, the homeowner will then decide which contractor they would like to hire, hopefully one of mine. Mm-hmm. And my contractor goes about his work as he normally would. When he gets paid, I then get paid a pre-negotiated commission. So it could be 10%, it could be 15%, based on the dollar value of the job.
Okay, so the homeowner doesn't pay you directly, the contractor does.
Yeah, the homeowner doesn't pay me.
Yeah,
and then when the job...
The contractor doesn't have to pay you in advance, they pay you out of the money they earn.
Exactly, and it's a tax deduction for them, it's a sales and marketing expense.
Right,
and it's not a business where they're paying a fee for leads. Many contractors, there are online contractor databases where you pay a lead fee every time a lead is sent to you, whether or not the job comes to fruition. And I didn't structure my business that way.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have people helping you field these phone calls from Jane Doe homeowner?
I don't. I take all my own phone calls, and that seems pretty extraordinary. But this is a people-oriented business, and a lot of, I'd say the majority of people want to talk to me, they trust me, and I think that's one of the reasons why the business has become successful. They know they're getting, you know, my attention to their job. What actually happened, going back to what you had originally said when we first started to chat, is that my business, initially I started it on a very local basis in a very local market. When word got out, it really grew, and it grew quickly. Mm-hmm. And after my first year, I had more job referral requests than I could handle in a wider area than I had planned to target. And that was a defining moment for my business, and that's where I decided to duplicate myself so that I could keep to the business of my business and not get sidetracked trying to take on more than I could handle.
Right. And, of course, that's what we want to talk a little bit about when we come back from our first break, which we're going to take right now. Deborah, thank you for that overview. You've given us a really good backdrop to continue and kind of talk with people about some of the concepts that you just mentioned and how they might be duplicated in other types of businesses so that people can kind of benefit from the things that you've done in their particular area. This is Indie Business Radio, your host, Donna Maria. We're going to take a short break. I'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Indie Business Radio. Today's show is sponsored by the Indie Beauty Business Magazine. This is a brand spanking new publication, formerly known as the Handmade Beauty Business Magazine, as many of you know. I hope you'll take a moment to go on over to the website at indiebeauty.com, I-N-D-I-E, beauty.com. Click on the link for the magazine and have a look around. We've got an issue out right now, and we've also got another one coming up. Our theme for the next issue, which will be out in March, is reinvention. And we are talking about someone who has reinvented herself into a business owner. Deborah Cohen from New York has a business helping homeowners find contractors to improve their homes. And before we took our break, she had given us a lot of great background information about how she got started. And Deborah, we're going to talk a little bit about how you chose to duplicate your business model. You talked a little bit about why. What were the first things that you did and to move forward to make things happen for you, even though you weren't actually doing the work? How did you start to duplicate yourself?
Well, I would say, you know, when I was faced with all of this, you know, the work, as an entrepreneur, most entrepreneurs tend to be a little opportunistic, which is, you know, one of the reasons why many are successful. So I couldn't bear not to, you know, to turn away jobs. And ultimately what I realized was that if I continued to work at the pace I was working, things would fall through the cracks and I would ultimately fail. So I realized I needed a plan B. And I picked up a book, I don't know if you're familiar with it, Donna Marie, called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Yeah.
And that book was so motivating, and it ultimately gave me the idea to duplicate myself. In fact, I think those were his exact words, that people can't be in the business of, for instance, if you own a bakery, you can't be in the business of making muffins. You have to be in the business of the business.
Well, you know, let's talk about that for a second, Deborah, because that is something that is difficult for a lot of business owners to really chew on that. Because if you start a business baking muffins, it's like the thing you like to do more than anything in the universe. And a lot of times, of course, since you bake the best muffins in the universe, you know, you're the only one who can do them that way. And you have to be there all the time because you have to make sure they're perfect, not to mention, you know, make sure that you get the ones left over to take home.
And eat yourself.
I mean, when you talk with other women, do you find that that's a challenge for people? And if so, what, you know, based on your experience and seeing other business models out there, how do you recommend that people handle that?
Well, one of the things that I recommend is if you really want to bake muffins and that's what you want to do day in and day out and that's what brings you pleasure, then you need to find somebody else to handle the business ends of your business. And if you want to, for instance, in my case, I love dealing with people. I know that the bread and butter of my business is talking to my homeowners. And I needed to find somebody to handle my website, to handle my accounting, to handle, you know, my printing, my invoicing, my, you know, promotional campaign, sending out my, you know, direct mail piece every month so that I could keep on doing what I enjoy doing and what was the bread and butter and the bones of my business. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if somebody loves to bake, I'm sure Sarah Lee loved to bake muffins, ultimately she had to keep to, you know, the aspect of her business that was, you know, the focus, making the money for her and what she loved to do, and hire outside advisors and a support staff to handle the aspects of her business that she didn't enjoy doing, so she would have, you know, as a business owner, you have to wear a lot of hats. So you, if you know you can't wear all of the hats and you want to be the baker, then you need to find other people to handle those responsibilities.
You need to delegate.
Delegate and outsource, because, you know, not every business can support hiring a staff.
Right, and that scares people. Delegating, outsourcing, it scares people a lot of times because they're going to lose that control. But you make such a good point that, you know, if you're going to stay in business, you can't do everything yourself.
Yeah. You have to focus on what you're good at and then hire outside advisors who are experts, legal experts, tax experts, marketing experts, web experts, so that you don't have to worry about teaching yourself all of those aspects of your business, and you can focus on what you're good at.
We're talking with Deborah Cohen, owner of Home Remedies of New York, Inc. She's talking about how she started her business and then how she took it to the next level by duplicating it so she could grow her business and not have to do everything herself. Do join us, 800-773-0355. Perhaps you have a question that Deborah can help you answer because you're trying to duplicate your business model too. 800-773-0355. Deborah, so you decided to go ahead and do it, and
yes.
Then you were, what, like, what do I do first? What did you do first, and how did it all come about?
Well, initially, I thought that I would franchise my business. And my first step was I hired a franchise consultant. And we sat down with an attorney and looked at my actual business model. And in doing that, I realized a few things that I didn't want. I didn't want to go back to working a 40-hour work week. And if I were to develop a franchise model, I would have to hire a staff and do that. And so that was the first big negative to the franchise model for me. The second was it was a significant cash investment, which we didn't have at the time. Mm-hmm. And then the third was knowing myself, I know day in and day out that I will run my business efficiently and with a high attention to customer service, and somehow the franchise model isn't appealing to me when I think that other people would be carrying my company name and representing me, and I didn't have the control to know whether or not they'd be doing that the way I would want it to be done.
Okay, now that's interesting because, well, I'm not an expert in franchising, and I know, you know, we always recommend that anybody who's going to do this would talk to an attorney about franchising, but I thought that with a franchise, like, I don't know, fast food franchises, for example, that they did maintain a lot of control. And, you know, there's like manuals and stuff about how long to cook the hamburger.
Yeah, there is, but, you know, they're hiring people. It's a lot of attention to detail that would require me to oversee all of their businesses. And my situation at the time was I didn't have enough time for my own business. And
okay.
I wanted to get back to my business.
All right, and so that's okay. So rather than... That's kind of where that 40-hour, more than 40-hour work week would have come in, I guess.
Absolutely.
So what other options did you look at, Deborah?
Well, in discussing my options with the franchise consultant, she actually mentioned the concept of a business in a box, which is what I offer now to other people who want to start this type of business, and it basically gives a potential business owner all of the tools they need and almost all of the tools they would receive if they decided to purchase a franchise, but they get complete autonomy. They operate their business independently. I offer them a marketing plan, consultation time, web support, as much or as little support that they'll need to run their business, and it's there if they need it. They're not obligated to follow my business model. They're not obligated to use my logo. They can change the commission structures if they want to, although most don't. So basically, I'm giving other people the opportunity to use my business model in their market, but they don't pay me a royalty fee, and they don't operate under my business name.
So if I wanted to do this, I could buy the business in a box, and I could call it Donna Maria's Homeowner Referral Service?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so it's not like licensing your brand name.
No, it's not. I'm just allowing people to take advantage of 10 years of my experience. I've also tried to create a lot of cooperative opportunities for HRN owners. I've created customized software for people to use, discounted rates on some promotional items, on advertising, on insurance. We're writing a newsletter that all HRN owners can use so that they can benefit, again, from the cooperative buying power of a franchise without having to pay a monthly franchise fee, being restricted to a certain territory.
Wow, so they just, it's a one-time investment for them, and they make of it whatever they will, and if they want these extra things from you, they can get them.
Absolutely, exactly.
That is so interesting. And so, like, do you offer, like, your consulting services to help them, like, if they buy the basic package and then they're struggling with marketing or some other issue, do you offer, like, consulting services outside of what's in the box?
Yes, absolutely. There are different packages, and I offer one-on-one consultation by phone, or via email, whatever.
That is so fascinating. It's really interesting because what you've done can be duplicated in a variety of different other types of businesses that people listening to the show may actually have already.
Absolutely.
A business that they can put in a box, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and figure out a way to help somebody else get started without licensing their name or having to deal with all the oversight stuff you're talking about.
And it saves the new entrepreneur, you know, up to a year on the learning curve if you're buying somebody else's operating system and they've had the experience, they've made mistakes, you're benefiting from somebody else's experience. And it's also nice to have the support of someone who's been there, someone who's done it. People have business coaches. In a lot of ways, I'm a business coach, but specific for this type of business.
So you have people that, do you call them, like, what do you call them? Are they contractors, or is there a word for them?
The name of the business is a homeowner referral network business, and the people who own these businesses I just call HRN owners.
Oh, that's
very technical.
Because when I was reading your materials to prepare for today, I kept seeing HRN owner, and I was going, now, what is that? In related to Home Remedies of New York.
Remedies of New York is my company. That's my
company.
Local HRM business, the parent company. The business itself is described as a homeowner referral network.
Right, and that's another website, right? You have your business website, and then you have this other website where people can go if they're interested in learning more about buying the business in a box, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a website for my local HRM business.
Right, you just have Home Remedies of New York, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and then tell everyone, in case anyone is interested in getting this business in a box, what is the website address for the other one?
It's hrnbiz.com.
Okay.
hrnbiz.com.
That's really great. Now let's talk a little bit about, let me make sure I let everybody know what the phone number to call in questions is again, because this is something that, you know, wake up out there, guys. If you haven't heard this, this is a fascinating way to think about growing your business, no matter what it is. 800-773-0355 is the number to join us here today with Deborah Cohen. Deborah, what did you, we talked a little bit before today about, about a couple of different kinds of businesses that might be able to make use of the kind of what you've done as kind of a model. So I just want to throw an example out there and see, you know, what you think about this. What are some things that come to your mind about how a business like this could create a business in a box? A lot of my listeners are in the home fragrance, bath and body products industry, and they have stores or retail areas or locations where they actually sell the ingredients and supplies to help other people make beauty products and candles and things. And then they also sell the finished candles and beauty products themselves. So let's say we've got somebody who's in that situation. They have one location, and that's what they do. Are there any things that come to your mind in terms of how they could duplicate themselves without having to deal with the franchising issues that you were talking about?
Well, the first thought that came to mind when you mentioned these types of businesses is distributorships.
Uh-huh.
And the niche that I would see for that type of business is there's so many moms out there who are looking for a way to earn money from home. And this would be a fabulous business for a mom, a part-time mom, a stay-at-home mom, where she could purchase a territory or, you know, offer to try to break the product into stores. Say, you know, if the owner, the originator of the business is in Florida, she would have the potential to expand into other markets in Ohio, in California. If these moms were distributors, they could attend trade shows, gift shows, help them market in a grassroots effort type of way.
So that would be like marketing of the ingredients as well as the finished products?
Well, I think that the way it should work is if the owner of the business, the person who purchased the distributorship or the mom who was handling a certain territory would buy the materials from the person who created the fragrance or the candle or whatever, what have you, with a trade manual explaining how to create the product, how to market it to local stores, how to keep inventory, how to price each item, so that they could train them, and then that distributor would ultimately always have to purchase the materials from the owner of the business, which would give the owner of the business a residual income and allow her to grow her business without having to do it all herself.
Right. She could just put the order in a box and send it off and help the person when needed. That's a really good way to think about that. And then maybe if the person teaches classes, I want to ask that question about some ways to duplicate yourself doing that when we come back from our next break. This is Indie Business Radio. We're talking with Deborah Cohen, who has duplicated her business model and is here to help you figure out ways and offer suggestions and tips for duplicating yours. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
All right, welcome back to Indie Business Radio, and I'm hesitating because I have to tell you guys, I don't mean to make you jealous or anything, but during the breaks I have the most fascinating conversations with my guests, and Deborah and I were just chatting about all the many different ways that this business model can be used without having to worry about franchise laws, without having to worry about licensing contracts and agreements. Deborah, how many states do you have HRN people in?
I would say at this point we're in almost every state with a few exceptions. And again, this is a local business, so there could be hundreds in one state, although we're not there yet. But I would say we're in at least 45 states, and we actually have some very successful HRN owners in Canada and in Europe as well.
And you've got 400, you said, or so, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you need to have, like, the business in a box conference. people can come, and I know you must have a book coming out. I'll be your agent, the business book. I can see it now. We've got a caller named Rhonda in Texas who wants to ask a question about business in a box. Welcome to the show, Rhonda.
Hi, Donna Maria. It's Rhonda, the paint woman. How are you? I have a question actually for Deborah. With your business, I like the business in a box model concept. Can you tell me, are there any legal issues that you should kind of be concerned with, or anything that you've learned that you would do differently, maybe when you first started the business in a box?
Well, legally, there are no issues because I'm not defining territories. And that's actually something that, as my business is growing, has become a little bit of a gray area. If you don't define a territory, then, you know, there's nothing to say that I couldn't sell to two people right in the same market.
Right.
I don't do that, actually. In fact, I have turned away people if I have an HRN owner who is successfully operating in a suburb of a city. Or, if I get an inquiry from somebody who's almost exactly in the same market, because I like to see people succeed, and after they've put so much work into their business, I don't want to put a direct competitor right next door. Those situations are few and far between because this is a local business. But I would say that, establishing territories is something that the franchise model offers that I don't.
Okay. So could
you can avoid. Thank you for that call, Rhonda. And by the way, Rhonda, are you the Rhonda at the Children's Art Cafe?
I am.
Oh, you guys, Rhonda's been featured on the Food Network, is it, Rhonda?
Uh-huh.
Because Rhonda's business, Deborah, is... Rhonda, why don't you tell us what your business is?
Yes, I'd love to hear.
It's called the Children's Art Cafe. The name of the product is Dappadoodle. It's edible paint for kids, or edible art fun for kids. Works just like regular school paints, but you can eat it. So you can paint a picture and eat a cookie at the same time, and paint a cookie at the same time.
Oh, I've seen these paintable cookies, haven't I?
But I also do edible art classes for kids. So Donna Marie and I have had dialogue, but I like the business in a box idea because I've gotten a lot of questions from moms and people that want to, inquire, if I'm doing franchising or teaching the classes. So I've been looking for some kind of business model, that could kind of work, without necessarily going the franchising route. So
I can definitely see how this would work. Do you have a website?
Uh-huh. It's childrensartcafe.com.
Yeah, a lot of possibilities.
What's funny, too, is that Rhonda started her business just because she was entertaining her children, not because she was looking to be the CEO of something. So
right.
It's exactly what happened to you in a totally different, way.
Sure.
Well, thank you for your call, Rhonda.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
We'll be looking for your Children's Art Cafe Business in a Box website shortly.
Okay. I see a lot of potential, Rhonda.
Thanks. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for calling in. You know, I'm so glad she called, Deborah, because it just goes to show how universal this concept is. And for women and men or anyone who's looking to have a way to duplicate their business model, continue to generate profit without having to create more hours in the day, it sounds like you can twist it and turn it in little ways to suit it for you, but overall it just sounds so attractive.
It really is. And just going back to Rhonda for a minute, my mind is spinning now with ideas for her business. But in her case, I think that the franchise model may be the most appropriate way to go.
And is that mainly just because it's not geographic like yours?
Well, my business can be operated from home. A business like hers, it would be ideal to have a storefront, children's classes. There's a liability issue, so you need, insurance. You could do children's classes. You could do children's birthday parties. And then she could supply the materials to each franchise owner and make a profit in that, in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very attractive business, again, to moms. And the initial investment doesn't have to be tremendous. And if she wanted to create it where people could do it out of their homes, she would just need to research the liability issues and maybe come up with an insurance policy that all of the people she licensed this business to could benefit from.
So it sounds like maybe even though anyone can certainly consider this and find some synergies, it sounds like maybe a service-related business might work a little bit, have a little bit fewer issues to deal with?
Well, in my experience, yes. And for instance, if the business model were something like a personal chef, where you wanted to create meals for people, that's something you could do right in your own home. But in Rhonda's case, what comes to mind is Build-A-Bear. I imagine you're familiar with Build-A-Bear.
Yes.
Look at the success of that.
My pocketbook is familiar with
it. And my basement. We have a family of bears living downstairs. But, you know, there's a huge market for children, just like for weddings and for babies.
Yeah.
And I could definitely see her business model growing. But the other thing that, you know, people need to ask themselves is, what am I willing to invest in this?
Mm-hmm.
And again, like when I was faced with this situation and the decision how I was going to grow my business, I knew what I was willing to invest in my time and financially.
Obviously one of the things that you had to invest was you had to pay a franchise consultant, and you didn't ultimately get a franchise.
Exactly, and that was a big expense for me.
Yeah, that was an investment that you made in order to then make your investment.
Exactly. After I stopped working with the franchise consultant and I decided to, you know, pursue the business in the box model, although she did initially help me with writing a business manual because she showed me what a franchise manual looked like, and I used that as my guide. I actually, a dear friend of ours graduated from Wharton, and he used to run the SBA at Wharton, the Small Business Association, and he sat down with me over the course of a weekend, and we worked 14 hours a day and documented every detail of my business. And that's something that's also important for business owners to realize. A lot of what we do in our business each day is in our heads, and we take it for granted. But every detail needs to be documented if you want somebody else to be able to, you know, if you want to duplicate yourself and allow somebody else to step into your shoes.
Right. Now, Deborah, is what you're describing, is it, I subscribe to a business magazine, and in the marketplace section every month there's a section called, I can't remember what it's called, but there's all these different books you can buy. It's like a book called Start Your Own Contractor Business, and a book called, you know, Start Your Own Painting Business, or whatever it is. And it sounds like what's in those books, although I've never bought one, is like a step-by-step guide to becoming a successful painter or whatever, wherever you are. Is there a difference between something like that and what you do? Have you seen those books before?
I have, and they tend to be, without making a blanket judgment, very basic.
Okay. So
a lot of the same information you could pull off of the Internet.
Okay, so you're dealing with a lot of those details and things that are in your brain that other people are just sort of, typically anyway, or, you know, generally sort of looking at from a high-level overview.
Yeah, and I'm also, the information I'm giving my HRN owners is information that I've accrued on this business over 10 years, ads that I've had graphic designers design, customized software that I've developed through my own experience and the experience now of several hundred other HRN owners, commission structures that I've tested over and over and over again.
Okay.
Legal information that I've had lawyers draw up for me pertinent to this business and this business alone. Dialogues, very, very, very specific information, spreadsheets, based on my own business. I actually, one of the painters in my network, it's interesting you brought this up, said to me not too long ago, he's getting older, and he was thinking of starting a business teaching people across the country how to launch and run a successful painting business, how to do estimates, what materials to use, how to market your business, and he has been operating his business, I'd say now it's about 20 years, 25 years even. His expertise would be something, you know, you wouldn't find in the back of one of those magazines. That's life experience over many, many years, knowing how to deal with people, knowing your trade. And that's pretty much the same category that my business is in.
Right, right. Now, we talked a little bit about somebody who had products to sell. Let's talk for a second about maybe someone who has, as we talked about a minute ago, seems particularly suited for a service-based business. Like I said, when we were talking earlier, I have a friend that does, like, motivational speaking and helping people, you know, be the best that they can be, lose weight, be fit, and all that kind of stuff. And she's, like, stressed to the max with all her writing and jet-setting across the country. Workshops. Any ideas based on your experience for how she could duplicate that without having to deal with all the franchising and all that stuff? and still be able to do it herself?
Well, where does the problem lie? Does she have too many clients? Is she handling too many aspects of her business on her own?
Well,
I mean, one thing that comes
really
to mind is...
It's really more that the travel and being everywhere and coaching people, you know, in groups is what she does.
Yeah,
so
and...
go ahead.
Well, two things come to mind. One, there's so many opportunities with the Internet now to host teleconferences online. Although I guess in a motivational speaking type of arena, it's more about, you know, body movement and eye contact and a lot more than just, you know, your voice. The other option, and this is something that has been suggested to me so many times, is to have everybody come to her and have a workshop, a three-day workshop hosted somewhere and have people pay $1,000 for the weekend plus travel expenses and have them all come to her maybe three times a year and sell packages where they can come every quarter and at each conference offer them new materials to market their local, you know, motivational or coaching businesses.
Yeah, and that, you know, the weight loss and fitness thing seems like it's really suited to this because no matter where you go, there's going to be a market for that.
And many fitness professionals go to trade shows all over the country to find out what's new and you know, new equipment, new techniques. You know, it's always changing. But I would say in her case, she might want to have people come to her, and it might be a lot more profitable for her.
Right, right. And, like, well, like you said, I mean, she could sell the fitness coaching business in a box on the Internet.
Sure. And then
not have to ever get up again.
And then offer these seminars as support.
Right. Do it all on the Internet.
She'll become fat and lazy doing it, but...
Never. Goodbye fitness, right? That's interesting because, you know, again, it's just an example of how many options there are, particularly with the advent of the Internet and, as you said, teleclasses and all those kinds of things. And I think it really points out that if you have an area of expertise, any kind of area of expertise, it may not be your passion, it may not be something that you love, but it can be something that you're good at and you're very knowledgeable about, you can figure out a way to somehow package it for people who want to do it or want to be involved in it, how to do this, and sell it.
Sure. Your friend also, Donna Marie, another suggestion would be maybe creating a DVD or a video. And
right,
selling that to her licensees.
Yeah, well, that'll keep you from getting lazy and unfit. Up on video. You know, I'm so glad that you joined before. You know, it's funny because remember when we were first chatting by email to book you for the show, I requested a review copy of your book, and you were like, well, it's not really a book. Like a whole manual, unless you want to become, you know, a contractor referral. You don't want this book. But I want to encourage people who are interested in this particular business model who might be looking for this in your area. If you've struggled with home maintenance and things of that nature, this sounds like for you. So before we go, Deborah, would you share with everyone your contact information once again?
Sure. Our web address is hrnbiz.com, and HRN, of course, stands for Homeowner Referral Network, www.hrnbiz.com. And I'm also always interested in talking to people live, so if you prefer to pick up the telephone, my office number, 516-374-8504. And you can reach me via email through the website as well.
Great. Well, that's certainly how I first found you, and I'm so glad I did. Thank you for joining us, Deborah.
My pleasure, Donna Marie.
Can you believe it? We've come to the end of another hour. Next week, in honor of Valentine's Day, we're going to have couples on the show who are going to talk about what it's like to be in love and in business together. I hope you'll join us for that, get some great tips about how to make it all work with your spouse or the person you love in business as well as personally. I hope you'll join us then. That's next Monday right here on Indie Business Radio, where we do your business, your life, your way. See you next week.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.